So today, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and Acharyas, we'll hear about different kinds of guru and their functions. We'll also take a look, a brief look, at Acharya Tattva and founder Acharya Tattva. Because ISKCON is pretty much a unique situation, and in fact we have to take into consideration these two tattvas to really understand the makeup of ISKCON as a transcendental institution. As I said yesterday, we're not so much interested in handing out information, the path is Shraddha to Prem, not information to Prem. So each session I want to begin with a meditative reading of Narottam Das Thakur's Guru Vandana, just so that the heart is a little bit of in tune with actual facts about how the heart should feel about Guru. At the moment, we're in pretty bad shape. It's the nature of Kali, it's a faithless age. All of Kali's elements are working with him to break faith on all levels and anything sedantic. So it's very important that we remember that the mind doesn't just think, it feels. And how we feel about things very much influences how we think about things. So these emotions have to be shaped by the Acharya's bhajans. Then we know we're on safe ground. It's so very, very important. You can know all the Siddhanta. We've seen so many instances of it. You can know the Siddhanta, so many workers, wonderful preacher, and all of a sudden you're not there. Something was amiss in the heart. So the heart, the feelings, because we're sentient beings, we have feelings, so it's very, very important that we shape our hearts, our feelings, in such a way that they support our endeavors, our serious endeavors to become Krishna conscious. So let's have a read. It's a very, very deep and very beautiful bhajan. If we sing this every day in a contemplative mood, the mind is not going to give us too much trouble about Guru Tattva despite so many obstacles on the path. The lotus feet of my spiritual master are the abode of pure devotional service. I bow down to his lotus feet with great care and attention. By his grace, I can cross over this material existence and obtain Krishna. O mind, make the teachings emanating from the lotus mouth of my spiritual master one with my heart, and do not desire anything else. Attachment to the lotus feet of the spiritual master is the best way to make spiritual advancement. His mercy fulfills all desires, spiritual perfection. He who has given me the gift of transcendental vision is my Lord birth after birth. By his mercy, divine knowledge is revealed within my heart, bestowing prema bhakti and destroying ignorance. The Vedic scriptures sing of his character. O my beloved spiritual master, ocean of mercy and friend of the fallen souls, you are the teacher of everyone and the life of all people. O master, be merciful unto me and give me the shade of your lotus feet. May your glories now be proclaimed throughout the three worlds. It's such an exquisite bhajan. And the Siddhanta is there. Okay, so usually we concern ourselves with two gurus, and we don't really understand them or their function. But today we'll look at four gurus. They're all important, as we'll hear from Srila Prabhupada. We have the Vatna Pradakshaka Guru, the one who first leads us to Krishna consciousness. We have the Chaitya, or the internal guru, the Diksha Guru, and the Siksha Guru. So there are four gurus. So Srila Prabhupada tells us in his Madhya 8, 128 purport, the word guru is equally applicable to the Vatma Pradakshaka Guru, Siksha Guru, and Diksha Guru. Now, right at the very outset, I want to clarify what Prabhupada is saying here, because as conditioned souls, we have a very amazing tendency to get things back to front, to not really see them in appropriate perspective. So when we're saying, when he's saying the word guru is equally applicable, it doesn't mean that this one equals this one equals this one. That's how we tend to think about things. What it means is that this one is manifestation, servant of Godhead. This one is manifestation of servant of Godhead. This one is manifestation of servant of Godhead. So in that way, not this, 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 but this, this, this. You see the difference? It's because of their relationship with Krishna, how they're related to Krishna. Not only as the servant of Godhead, but also as his very dear and intimate associate and servant. So in this way, they're equally applicable. So one who first gives information about spiritual life is called the Vatma Pradashaka Guru, or the spiritual master who initiates, and then the spiritual master initiates according to the regulations of the Shastras is called Diksha Guru. And the spiritual master who gives instructions for elevation is called Siksha Guru. This is from Prabhupada's purport. Then there's also the Chaitya Guru, who dwells in the heart. He is the internal spiritual master. And all four of these are worshipable. All four are worshipable because they're all manifestations of Krishna. So today we want to talk about three of them, Diksha, Siksha, and Chaitya Guru. We'll have a look first at some quotes from Prabhupada, get us thinking. Take a look at the first handout that I've given you. It's called the Diksha and Siksha Guru. Only out of his immense compassion does the personality of Godhead reveal himself as a spiritual master. Therefore, in the dealings of an acharya, there are no activities but those of transcendental loving service to the Lord. He is the supreme personality of servant of Godhead. So this concept, if you don't want to get bewildered by a lot of what we see around us these days, this concept is very important to understand. That the guru is not an enjoyer. The guru is not a controller. The guru is a servant of Krishna. His preoccupation at all times and all circumstances is service. He's not going to take a few days off to enjoy himself. It's not his position. His very Atma, his very self, is a personification of servitude. He's a manifestation of Nityananda Ram. So this is, you know, when we're looking, especially if we're looking for Guru, this is a very important criteria. How much enjoying spirit is there? How much controller spirit is there? And how much servitorship is there? Very, very important. No other activities but those of transcendental loving service to the Lord. Why? Because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although others give help in showing the way to beginners, the guru who first initiates one with the Maha Mantra is to be known as the initiator, and the saints who give instructions for progressive advancement in Krishna consciousness are called instructing spiritual masters. The initiating and instructing spiritual masters are equal and identical manifestations of Krishna, although they have different dealings. Their function is to guide the conditioned souls back home, back to Godhead. So it's important that we understand what Prabhupada is saying here, that they're equal and identical manifestations of Krishna, but they have different dealings. So it means that Krishna's got an eye on you. He's seeing. If you're serious, he's got an eye on you. He sees, okay, you need support in this area. He's going to come himself in the form of Siksha Guru, or if it's preliminary, in the form of Diksha Guru. He's going to give this support. And the only function that these people have is to guide the soul back to Godhead. This is the function. It's so sweet. It's like, I remember one story where Prabhupada was explaining a different principle, but the story also applies here, where he was talking about how Krishna is multifaceted. And he has, although he's one person, he has so many different kinds of relationships. So he gave the example of a high court judge, very famous high court judge. So when he's in the court, he plays a certain role. He is, you know, dispensing the law, basically. When he's at home, he has a relationship with his wife. He has a relationship with his children. It's the same person, but the relationships are not the same. You're catching it. So Krishna is the one person, but he's seeing the need. And he also has a taste for relating in different ways. So he's going to appear first as Diksha Guru. And then as he sees the need, he sees you're serious, you're wanting to make some kind of real tangible advancement. And Siksha Gurus, he's going to manifest as Siksha Gurus. And they have different dealings. A devotee must have only one initiating spiritual master because in the scriptures, acceptance of more than one is always forbidden. There is no limit, however, to the number of instructing spiritual masters one may accept. Generally, a spiritual master who constantly instructs a disciple in spiritual science becomes his initiating spiritual master later on. Now, when we're talking this first sentence, a devotee must have only one initiating spiritual master. If that spiritual master is not qualified, he's not a bona fide spiritual master, then it is bona fide to take again, to take initiation again. At the time of initiation, you may not have known that the person was fallen or there was some deviation. You took in good faith. You found out later to your horror that that wasn't the case. You have to rectify that, because our aim is not to have a relationship with the guru. Our aim is to have a relationship with the parampara, who is, you know, taking us back step by step to Krishna. So it's important to be aware of that. One bona fide guru is the thing. And we also have to take this sentence very carefully, listen to it very carefully. There's no limit, however, to the number of instructing spiritual masters one may accept. But what we have to be aware of, in the interest, our own spiritual self-interest, we can't be whimsical in this matter. We have to see, does this person, first, are they more advanced than me in faith and attraction to Guru and Gauranga? Are they my Mahamoksha? Do they have my best interest at heart? You know? And are they like-minded? A similar mind, similar way of looking at the world. All of these things are important. So if you get in the habit of just collecting Siksha Gurus, pick one up, drop one, pick one up, drop one, it's offensive and it's extremely detrimental to spiritual life. It's not a cheap thing, as we heard yesterday, the role of Guru. It's a very precious and rare gift from Krishna, so we have to be careful how we deal with things. This is an interesting quote from Prabhupada's Adi 147 purport. There are two kinds of instructing spiritual masters. One is the liberated person, fully absorbed in meditation, in devotional service, and the other is he who invokes the disciple's spiritual consciousness by means of relevant instructions. I'm getting a glimpse here of the different ways, the different dealings that the Siksha Guru will act. Sri Sanatana Goswami is our ideal spiritual master, for he delivers one the shelter of the lotus feet of Madan Mohan. We could spend a week unpacking that sentence. It's very, very deep. But what we're looking at here, we're looking at Madan Mohan. Who are they? They're the attracting principle. Sambandha Gyan. So unless we have this Sambandha Gyan factually, our attachment to everything around us, our desire to enjoy it, is going to continue. So being aware that Sanatana Goswami is the via medium for getting their mercy, how important it is to actually pray to Sanatana Goswami, to spend time chanting with him. When you come to Vrindavan, it's just a little way down the road, 15 minutes, 20 minutes down the road. You can sit in his samadhi area very peacefully, very protected area. No monkey problems, no bigger problems. You can just sit there and chant. And it's very, very powerful because Sanatana Goswami's heart is unlimitedly expansive. Unlimitedly expansive. Such a merciful person. So merciful. And he was loved, he's still loved by all the Brijbasis. They don't call him Sanatana Goswami, they call him Mani Babu. And that's why most of them go on Parikram, on Guru Purnima, on any Purnima. It's in remembrance of Mani Babu. So it's interesting, he's such an amazing person. Have a listen to this next sentence. Even though one may be unable to travel on the field of Vrindavan due to forgetfulness of his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he can get an adequate opportunity to stay in Vrindavan and derive all spiritual benefits by the mercy of Sanatana Goswami. So we don't have qualification to be in the Dham, but because of the nature, the all-merciful nature of Gokul, we can enter and be on the Dham. That facility is coming by mercy of Sanatana Goswami. And by that facility, if we take proper advantage of it, we can enter into the Dham, not just sit on the top of it. Yeah? Okay.
Above it is written, generally, a spiritual master who constantly instructs a disciple in spiritual science becomes his initiating spiritual master later.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be the best.
It is the best.
But there could be exceptions to that, like it's generally.
Especially in an institutional situation where the guru, the Diksha gurus are traveling so much. They're sannyasis. So they're basically their preoccupation is the mission. They're not so much preoccupied with the individual. Their preoccupation is Prabhupada's mission and protecting and expanding it. So then you have a situation where, by the mercy of Prabhupada, you'll be attracted to one of those people, take Diksha, but then Krishna will provide Siksha. That's in harmony with the Diksha's guru's mood, like that. So this is the ideal, but it's more prevalent in a circumstance where in the old days, the Bhagavat Vidhi days, where you would go to the guru, join his ashram, you study with him, like that. But now the gurus are going out. It's a whole different ballgame now. You see? So you will find that very often, the Diksha gurus are traveling constantly. You're lucky if you see them a couple of times in a year. But there's no gap there because there's facility for Siksha. The important thing is that there is a facility of Siksha because we need it. So much, it's very difficult. These days it's very, very difficult. So much confusion. Influence of Kali is increasing horrifically day by day. So it's important to have some kind of shelter where you can actually feel you can, easily approach that person and talk things out. That's important. But that can never be out of harmony with the mood and purpose of the Diksha Guru. Yeah, is that okay? Okay. Sri Govinda Devji acts exactly like the Siksha Guru instructing spiritual master by teaching Arjuna the Bhagavad Gita. He is the original preceptor, for he gives us instructions and an opportunity to serve him. It's interesting. So the Siksha Guru is giving instructions and an opportunity to serve him. We spoke a little bit about this yesterday. It's not just a matter of hearing if you want realization. Two things have to be there for you to realize what you're hearing. To realize what you're hearing, there has to be the knowledge coming from the Siksha source, but there also has to be service. What we're looking at there is we're looking at the Sanvit Shakti, and the Hladini Shakti. You put them together, you get Sandini. Sandini, we're looking at the eternality. You get entrance into eternality through these two. You know, it's like they catalyze each other. And then something happens in the heart. So this is a very important thing to understand. Quite often we just get into the habit of hearing. That in itself is a service, but it doesn't activate much. And there has to be some practical service. Yeah?
When we say that Samvedi Radini is equal to Sandini, when Sandini is eternity.
We're not saying it's equal to, we're saying when you put the Samvedi and the Hladini Shaktis together, then you get the result will be Sandini.
So how are eternality and realizations related,
Madhuri? Because we're used to living in a world that's very temporary and got nothing to do with reality, right? So to actually cut through that veil and see things as they are, yeah? Cut through the veil and see things as they are, then that's when it happens. It's not a cheap thing. Krishna's not going to give things cheaply. We have to earn our way back. Because anything earned cheaply will be cheaply cheated. You lose it again. What's the point of that? Yeah? And you build a bit of muscle also. When things are a bit tougher, you build a bit of muscle. So that's good. Okay, so Govindaji, he's the original preceptor, the original Siksha Guru. The initiating spiritual master is a personal manifestation of Srila Madan Mohan Vigraha, whereas the instructing spiritual master is a personal representative of Srila Govindadev Vigraha. So we're looking at Sambandha and Abhideya. If the Sambandha and Abhideya are well founded, then Prayojana is obviously going to follow. Not going to be a problem with that. Any further questions on that?
If you have so many times that the Bhagavad Gita is spoken by Bhagavad Gita, how do we understand this
Bhagavad Gita? Krishna can manifest. You know, when we want to express a different emotion, we just keep the same form and get angry. You know, the heart palpitation increases, the eyes get a bit red, breath is a bit shorter. We get angry, right? But Krishna wants to get angry because he is Rasaraj, he wants to enjoy anything he does, he wants to enjoy it. So when he wants to get angry, he's going to become Shrinidhi. You know, he's tasting, so he's going to manifest in many different ways. It's the same person, same Kesha, but he's manifesting in a different way to taste different things. So in the same way, Vasudeva is a Kshatriya. Likes to fight, likes to be on the battlefield. Right? So he's acting as Arjuna's charioteer. Krishna in the mood of Vasudeva is acting as Arjuna's charioteer. But then when it comes to instruction, Vasudeva is not in the position to do that. Govindadev has to do that. Adi Siksha Guru. And it's a serious business. It's just not one guru speaking to one disciple. He's imparting that knowledge to re-establish the disciplic succession. It's been broken. Serious business. So not just anybody can do it. Adi Guru has to do it. And Adi Guru is Govindadev. Radha Govindadev. Okay?
So the instructions being imparted to Arjuna are by Govindadev?
Yes. Yeah. He can manifest in an amazing person. Okay, let's move on. Yeah.
Madhuri, like if all of the answers in a, like in the beginning when you told about like we try to see the things from back from
yes.
You know? So we sometimes try to distinguish like now we are studying Shiksha Guru, Diksha Guru,
right?
Like four types of different gurus. So when we are singing Guru Vandana, they're like we are talking about attachment to the lotus feet of Guru, to the.
Mm-hmm.
So like our that attachment is to the lotus feet of our Diksha Guru, or
good question, or very good question.
The founder Acharya. So how we understand?
Okay, you know, this is an interesting question, because when we first take initiation, we're like little children. And if you look at a small child, very, very small child, the main attraction is to the mother. Why? Because the mother's feeding the child. The only person the child can see and relate to is the mother. So when we first take Diksha, it's in the same kind of situation, that we're, you know, our heart is firmly fixed at the feet of Diksha Guru. And when we're singing Guru Vandana at that time, we'll be meditating on him. But then, by his mercy, the heart starts to expand. The ignorance starts to dispel. And we start to understand that, wait a minute, there's a whole family of mercy waiting to help me out here. Yes? So then I know one guru, amazing person. He spends a good 2 hours before he begins his japa praying to the different acharyas, praying to different god brothers. Amazing person. 2 hours. I mean, most of us are trying to get our japa done in rush, rush. You know, he's actually cultivating a very strong mood of family, a very strong mood of support and respect and appreciation. You know? So when we first take initiation, it's natural. It's a natural thing. You know, you're very young in devotional service. So that will be there. But then you understand that Krishna is manifesting in so many amazing ways. So many amazing ways. I mean, when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was in the height of his preaching days, whenever he spoke of Guru, he was referring either to Bhakti Vinod Thakur or Gaukashodas Babaji Maharaj. And it was very clear that that's who he was speaking to. But in his final days, in his private final days, when he was speaking about Gurudev, he was speaking about Rupa Manjari. So you can see how subtle and how intricate the Guru Tattva mercy network is. It's really quite something, yeah. But it's a very good idea, and you'll find that at different times you may be going through different challenges, you may be having different realizations. You may find that one of the acharyas will move forward to help you with that particular aspect, because that's their field. Like that, yeah. But it is very good when you sing Guru Vandana. If you can find the time after you do that, it's very good to offer lamp not only to Prabhupada and your Gurudev, but to the main acharyas in our line with their pranam mantras. Because we have to remember that the guru, our Diksha Guru, our Siksha Guru, founder acharya, they're front line for the whole disciplic succession. They don't stand alone. They're actually acting as our link with the parampara.
Yeah, like
you
can think like this, they're manifestations of our Adi Guru.
Yeah. They're all manifestations of servant of Godhead, but they're also all very dear and intimate associates of Krishna. Both. Yeah? Because you can be a servant and not have any association. Right? So they're very intimate associates, but they're also servant of Godhead. So the whole package is there for your benefit. It's just a matter of taking advantage of it. Taking advantage of the incredible mercy network that we have at our disposal. Yeah? We have a tendency, when we want to know something more, to go looking horizontally. We look around us horizontally. But if you have any real depth, you go deep. I can't find it in Prabhupada's writings. Let me look at Bhaktisiddhanta. Let me look Bhaktivinoda. Let me look Sanatana Goswami. Let me look. Go deep. not gaur, look here, there and everywhere, but deep. This is where we find the gems. On the surface you catch fish. You want gems, you go deep. Yeah? That means that you can't be a sahaja or a prakrita. You have to be of some caliber. The prakritas want everything cheap. Same with materialists. But, you know, if you're a serious sadhaka, you'll pay the price. You'll take the time and energy that's required. Okay, let's move on. Have a look. These are very... Here we're going to have a look not only at Diksha and Siksha Gurus, this is the second handout, but we're also going to have a serious look at Chaitya Guru. Because we do ourselves a very serious disservice by not being aware of his function in our lives. Such an amazing role he plays in our spiritual life. These are illuminations from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur from his Amritavani. There are three types of spiritual masters: the initiating guru, the instructing guru, and the Chaitya guru. The spiritual master is never ordinary, he is godly. It is an offense to separate the spiritual master from Sri Krishna Chaitanya by considering him an ordinary, insignificant human being. In the form of the spiritual master, Krishna alone awakens the living entity's spiritual consciousness and thereby helps him attain eternal benefit. So it's Krishna alone, but he's taking the form of a spiritual master. The initiating spiritual master awards transcendental knowledge, knowledge of the absolute truth. What is that absolute truth? Krishna alone is my eternal master and I am his eternal servant. This transcendental knowledge or sambandha jnana is imparted by the initiating spiritual master. Now the interesting thing is that you may think, well, I don't remember my Gurudev giving me sambandha jnana when I took Diksha. That's because we think information. But when we're talking bhakti, we're talking practice. We're talking being very practical. So what did he do? He gave you a dog collar. I'm Prabhupada's dog now, in the form of Kunti Mala. He changed my name. It has a das or a dasi at the end of it. Yes? And he gave me a mantra, which I'm supposed to chant quite a lot in a day, that means, please, Radharani Krishna, engage me in your service. This is the very heart of sambandha jnana. Not that he has to sit down and say, well, now we're going to talk about sambandha jnana. That's for the jnanis. That's for the process dwellers. But if we're looking at bhakti, then we're talking practical activity, especially if we're Rupanugas. Practical. Very practical. So then the onus is on you, the responsibility is on you. How seriously are you taking that little dasi title, that little das title that's at the end of your name? How seriously are you taking the mantra he's given? If you take these seeds that the guru gives, you treat them with proper respect, then sambandha jnana is going to flourish. Making sense? Okay, good. The initiating spiritual master awards transcendental knowledge, knowledge of the absolute truth. Krishna alone is my eternal master, and I am his eternal servant. Not good enough to hear it. We have to practice it in our daily lives. Be put in circumstances where it's tested. This transcendental knowledge of sambandha jnana is imparted by the initiating spiritual master. An instructing spiritual master first tells us how to remove anattas and then teaches us the process of pure devotion. This is another very important key if you're looking for guru. The Guru is not going to instruct you above your level of realization. First, get rid of the trash. We're not going to build a temple for Krishna in a straw pit. Sorry, that's not the way we do things. First, we're going to clean out the straw pit. That's quite some endeavor, not a very pleasant task. We have to get rid of these anattas. Right? The anattas have to go. Then we can start to develop our understanding, our factual understanding of pure devotional service. In most cases, the initiating spiritual master acts as the instructing spiritual master. A conditioned soul cannot act as an instructing, as an initiating or instructing spiritual master. Now this is a very incredible sentence. A conditioned soul cannot act as an initiating or instructing spiritual master. Now the key to understanding this sentence is, what makes us conditioned? My identity, my false ego. If I'm a Vesh, if I'm lined up with Guru in the Parampara, I'm not seeing myself as Guru, I'm seeing myself performing the service of Guru. Even though I may appear to be conditioned, in my everyday habits I'm not. Prabhupada compares it to a postman. The position is like that of a postman. Postmen are not very, you know, nobody takes them too seriously. Right? It's not like they're highly qualified or anything like that. But they have one good qualification, and they don't open the letters. And they deliver to them to the people they're meant for. Right? So in this sense, very, very important. Understanding. Okay. So Srihari, who dwells in our hearts as a super soul, is the internal spiritual master, Chaitya Guru. Chaitanya Charitamrita states, Krishna Yodi Kripa Karit Kona Bhagyavan Guru Antiyami Rupa Sikya Apane. Krishna is situated in everyone's heart as a Chaitya Guru, the spiritual master within. When he is kind to some fortunate conditioned soul, he personally gives him lessons so he can progress in devotional service, instructing the person as the super soul within and the spiritual master without. Now, one thing we have to understand is that Krishna's kindness is transcendental kindness, not New Age kindness. Right? New Age kindness is all very lovey-dovey and sweet, and everything is so sweet. But with Krishna's kindness, sometimes it can be very bitter. He's going to give you the medicine you need. He's not going to give you the medicine you want. He's not going to give you sweets instead of medicine because it's what you want. He's going to give you what you want. No, he's going to give you what you need. Okay? So this is a very important thing. When is he going to be kind? He's going to be kind when he sees that you are realizing that you need to know something, you need to do something, and you haven't got a clue what to do. But you're really hankering for that. Then he's going to be kind. Yeah? He's not going to be kind if you have no interest in his kindness. If you're not going to know how to accept in an appropriate way his kindness. He sees you're just wallowing in the usual habits, despite initiation, despite this, despite that. He's not going to touch you. It's not going to be Chaitya Guru, it's going to be Paramatma. He's just going to be dealing with, you know, what's going on. But if we want the Chaitya Guru to be kind to us, we have to have a genuine inquisitiveness, a genuine desire to really move forward. And then he will be kind. Now this last section I want you to listen to very, 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 very carefully, this last paragraph. If you catch this, it can revolutionize your life. The Chaitya Guru awards us the qualification to realize the instructions we have heard from the initiating and instructing gurus. Interesting. He also imparts the strength to to follow those orders. Without his mercy, no one can understand the intention of either the initiating or instructing spiritual master. Lord Sri Gaurangadeva alone awards transcendental knowledge and pure devotional service through the initiating spiritual master, protects that pure devotion by sending the instructing spiritual masters who are non-different from him, and as the internal spiritual master, personally awards the strength to follow the Guru's orders and teachings. Isn't that incredible? Incredible mercy network. Now, maybe if we look at this seriously, a question may come to mind. Or maybe I need to take my relationship with Chaitya Guru a little more seriously. Preoccupation with Diksha and Siksha. But if the relationship is not there with Chaitya, how are you going to benefit by the relationship with Siksha or Diksha? He's the one, the Chaitya Guru. He's giving the qualification to realize the instructions we're hearing from initiating a Siksha Guru. And he's giving the strength to follow those orders.
But again, the question comes like, we could think it's Chaitya Guru, or we could think it could be our mind.
Okay. Let's deal with that very practically. How can we best strengthen our relationship with Chaitya Guru? So that doubt whether this is mind or whether this is Chaitya Guru, that doubt is cleared up. How can we do that? Tell me. Give me some good ways that we can strengthen our relationship with Chaitya Guru.
One is by raw prayer and the experience of the reciprocation.
Okay.
And such a thing actually happened. My instruction came and it gave a result.
Okay.
And the faith will keep getting stronger and stronger.
Very good. Okay.
When we are preoccupied with service and being sincere in our whole spiritual thing, then mind doesn't get the space to
okay.
Act.
That's what's interesting.
Chaitya Guru gives an instruction. Then it depends on us whether we follow that or follow what we like.
Okay.
If we follow that, then he gives instruction again, and the relationship keeps becoming stronger and stronger.
Very nice. Okay.
By following what Sisha Guru and Diksha Guru are teaching us, if we sincerely follow, then.
That's pleasing to Chaitya Guru. Yeah, very good. Okay, so these are good ideas. I'm going to give you a more subtle thought that you may like to dwell on. I'm going to suggest that you chant Rudra Geet. It's the 24th chapter of the 4th canto of Bhagavatam. Now, you may, and this is a prayer. I'll read you some of the benedictions that go with this. Quite amazing. It's a prayer by Shivji to win the mercy of Chaitya Guru, specifically for this purpose. Now the interesting thing is that we have such minds, you may think, what? Pray to the Lord of the heart? I don't have a four-armed God, I'm a Braj Bhakta. I only worship a two-handed bhakta. You know, my God is two-handed. I don't want anything to know about this. I'm a Braj Bhakta. Now, we should be aware that that kind of mentality is crippling us. We are not Braj Bhaktas. We are aspiring Braj Bhaktas. We have to take help where it's appropriate to get to the point of being a Braj Bhakta. Isn't it?
No.
You know, a child in grade 4 school, he, you know, is really into YouTube. And he finds this amazing, you know, like video on the glories of being a heart surgeon. So he's in grade 4, but he comes preoccupied. I'm going to be a heart surgeon. And the teachers are saying, now you have to study geography. What's that got to do with being a heart surgeon? I don't want to learn geography. I'm going to be a heart surgeon. Can you see how ridiculous it is? How can we, you know, what we think is not the reality. We may have an aspiration, but we have to know the path to achieve it. Yes? If we want to do things real. I mean, we can be a quack, set up a clinic with no qualification and kill a few people. That's not really the way to go. Now, you see what we're saying? Now, you have a listen to the... I'll just give you a couple of the benediction that Shivji gives. This is when he's speaking to the Prachetas, who are sons of Prachanda Bahani. Now, here, he's about to speak the mantra of the Rudra Gita. Now I should chant one mantra which is not only transcendental, pure and auspicious, but is the best prayer for anyone who is aspiring to attain the ultimate goal of life. When I chant this mantra, please hear it carefully and attentively. And then at the end he says, although rendering devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and worshipping Him are very difficult, if one vibrates or simply reads this stotra, this prayer, composed and sung by me, he will very easily be able to invoke the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the dearmost objective of all auspicious benedictions. A human being who sings this song, sung by me, can please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a devotee being fixed on the Lord's devotional service can acquire whatever he wants from the Supreme Lord. My dear sons of the King, dear sons of Prachanda Bahari, the prayers I have recited to you are meant for pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul. I advise you to recite these prayers, which are as effective as great austerities. In this way, when you are mature, your life will be successful and you will certainly achieve all your desired objectives without fail. Now, Madhav Damodar is saying we pray to Supersoul. But doesn't it make more sense that we pray knowing that He's pleased with us? You can pray to somebody, but they may not be interested. They may not be attracted. But if you're every, take, you know, this is a 10-minute a day investment. It's not a high price to pay to please the Lord who's governing all these things we just spoke about. Yeah? So, you know, we always have to look, if we're essence seekers, we always look for the essence of the thing. I want to develop my relationship with Chacha Guru. I'm not going to do it one-on-one. I'm not qualified. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm in complete ignorance. I don't know what I'm doing. I wouldn't be in this mess if I knew what I was doing. Right? So let me take shelter of someone who knows what they're doing. Shivaji is a Mahajan. Amazing personality. He's in his own tattva, he's so amazing. So let me take shelter of him. Chant his prayer. Now the interesting thing about chanting his prayer is that when you chant his prayer, you not only please Supersoul, but you please him. Yeah. You've got a lot going for you by doing that.
Double benefit.
Yeah? Okay. Just a thought. It's very important that we really be aware of the treasures, the network of treasures that Prabhupada has given us. You know, that means you have to know Bhagavatam, you have to know CC. Okay.
Mataji,
sure.
Mataji, again, like in Guru Ashtak, when we say Sakshad Haritvin Samasta Shastra, in this handout which we are reading, the first paragraph, when it says, it is an offense to separate the spiritual master from Sri Krishna Chaitanya.
Right.
So, this is... the understanding, like the Guru Ashtak, and this is like we should understand that he is the Guru, is the servant and an intimate associate of Mahaprabhu.
He's not only a servant, but he's server to Godhead. He's not different than Mahaprabhu. It's not that he's just servant. Mm-hmm. We'll read about that, we'll deal with that more next week. But what we're looking at is that he's not just servant, he's server to Godhead. Yeah? You have Shaktiman and you have Shakti. The Shakti is the servant of Shaktiman. So in this case, we're looking at Mahaprabhu. He is Godhead. But then servant of Godhead is Guru. That makes sense?
Yes.
Okay, good. Now I would like to take a look at Acharya Tattva. And I want to do this from a couple of angles of vision. The first one is I want to have a look at a verse from Madhya 19 and Purport by Prabhupada. We're looking at text 156 in Purport. This is a very well-known verse. If the devotee commits an offense at the feet of a Vaishnava by cultivating the creep of devotional service in the material world, his offense is compared to a mad elephant that uproots the creeper and breaks it. In this way, the leaves of the creeper are dried up. Now, usually when we read this verse or we think about this verse, we think in terms of the devotees around us. I don't want to offend the devotees around me. We think like that. But the fascinating thing about the way Prabhupada handles this verse is that he's seeing it in terms of please don't offend Guru or the Parampara. These are the main people we don't want to offend. And we should be aware that offense can be active and it can be passive. An example of active offense is when you criticize or belittle the Guru. Passive, neglect him. It's an offense to neglect the Guru or his instructions. You see, so it's a very fascinating the way Prabhupada has dealt with this. I want to read the whole purport and then go through it a little bit of certain statements that he makes. Very powerful, what he says here. I consider it one of the key purports in Chaitanya Charitamrita in terms of Guru Tattva. One's devotional attitude increases in the association of a Vaishnava. By his personal example, Narottam Das Thakur stresses that a devotee must always remember to please his predecessor Acharya. How do we keep a mood of service if we don't have that mood? The Goswamis are represented by one's spiritual master. One cannot be an Acharya without following strictly in the disciplic succession of the Acharyas. Following strictly in the disciplic succession of the Acharyas. One who is actually serious in advancing a devotional service should desire only to satisfy the previous Acharyas. You see how, can you see what's happening here? We don't want to take it at face value. If we have this desire, what's going to automatically happen? It's going to be a strengthening of relationship with the disciplic succession, the strengthening of relationship with the Acharya. Right? You become more and more avesh with them, more and more lined up with them. Can you see how that will work? One should always think of oneself as a servant of the Acharyas, and thinking this, one should live in the society of Vaishnavas. Now, it's a bit of a circus living in a Kanista institution because people don't have this mentality. Krishna consciousness is a tag on. I am who I am, I do what I like to do, and I tag on. I sometimes chant some rounds, I sometimes follow some regulative principles, but basically I'm me and I'm human. This is not what we're talking here. This is what we're looking at, the culture, the least the Majjam Majjam. I'll read it again. This is an amazing sentence and one worth living. One should always think of oneself as a servant of the Acharyas, servant of the Guru of the Acharya. And thinking this, one should live in the society of Vaishnavas. If we were living in the society of Vaishnavas with that mentality, if everybody was doing that, what an amazing institution ISKCON would be right now. Not all the extra baggage. However, if one thinks it has become very mature and can live separate from the association of Vaishnavas, and thus gives up all the regulative principles due to offending a Vaishnava, one's position becomes very dangerous. Offenses against the Holy Name are explained in Adi Lila chapter 8 verse 24. Giving up the regulative principles, living according to one's whims, are compared to a mad elephant. Very interesting definition of the mad elephant. We throw it around all the time, the mad elephant offense. But what is the mad elephant offense? The mad elephant offense is to give up the regulative principles and act according to your whim. That's what lets it loose. Yeah? Interesting. Giving up the regulative principles and living according to one's whims are compared to a mad elephant, which by force uproots the bhakti ladder and breaks it to pieces. It doesn't just damage it, it will grow again. It uproots it. Finished. In this way, the bhakti ladder shrivels up. Such an offense is especially created when one disobeys the instructions of the spiritual master. This is called guru avagya. The devotee must therefore be very careful not to commit offenses against the spiritual master. As soon as one is deviated from the spiritual master, the uprooting of the bhakti lata begins and gradually all the leaves dry up. So this deviation from the spiritual master, the whole point of taking shelter of Vaishnav Thakur is not that he line up with you. The whole point is that you line up with him. Now, if you do that, despite the fact that you have weaknesses, despite the fact that you may even have offensive mentality, you're carrying so much luggage, but if you're moving in line with the guru, you're in a protected situation. But you see in Vrindavan, all the trees have shadows. Tulsi Devi has shadow. They're Kapha Vriksha trees. They're transcendental trees. Transcendental personalities, but they have a shadow. So we're like the shadow of the Vaishnav Thakur. As long as we are in harmony with Vaishnav Thakur, no problem. Even though we have so many limitations. But if we act independent of Vaishnav Thakur, such an unnatural, strange thing. Have you ever seen a shadow work independently of the substance? You see the tree here and the shadow is supposed to be here, but it decides it wants to be there. This is when you get chaos in the Sampradaya. When the shadows are working independent of the substance, you get chaos in the Sampradaya. So we don't want to talk about that, we want to talk about our circumstance, our situation. What does it mean for us? It means that we take this sentence, one should always think of oneself as a servant of the servant of the Acharyas, and thinking this one should live in the society of Vaishnavas, we take that as a heart mission. This is the way I want to live. It may mean we're not very popular. What is the problem with that? 75% of the population are with Krishna. If Krishna's pleased, they're pleased. It's only 25% we're seeing here. What does it really matter if they don't like our mood or our value structure? It doesn't really count. Am I making sense to you? No?
So being independent means what Vaishnav Thakur means? That whatever the instructions have
been
given.
Can you speak up? I can't hear you.
Oh, being independent of Vaishnav Thakur means, Madhuri, that not following the instructions, and whimsically we are progressing up, we are making our own process now.
Yeah, and whimsically presenting the philosophy. You know, we're not presenting the philosophy as a servant of Guru and Gauranga. We're presenting it almost as a competitor. I've got my opinion on this. That's not our position. Next week we'll come to understand this a lot more clearly, because we'll look at some very hard-hitting statements by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur of who can act as spiritual master. Anybody who thinks he's a Vaishnav is disqualified. Anyone who thinks he's a guru is disqualified. Only who thinks he is the servant of the servant of Guru and the Acharyas, he is qualified. Why? Because we're talking link. We're talking parampara. You have to be sold out. Otherwise, how can you be that link? You break off and say, oh, I don't want to go over here. I don't like this side. I don't like where these guys are hanging out. I want to go over there. Doesn't make any sense. It's a very simple thing, but we don't catch it. We get caught up, you know, this one's a great orator, this one's a great tapasvi, he's such an amazing guru because he's such a great orator, this one is such a great guru, and all this rubbish. How sold out is he to the Acharya? How much of his life, heart and mind is dedicated to the Acharya? This is the qualification. If you want the real thing. We'll also look at that next week. Why we get the guru we get. Interesting. Okay, let's move on.
Madhya 19.
Yeah. This is Madhya 19, 156 and Purport.
This, just before this you had mentioned that we might not be following the Acharyas, or we are like against them. So I can understand how one can, you know, not follow up to Prabhupada.
Uh-huh.
But above them, how could one be not...
Because Prabhupada is representing them.
Right.
So inadvertently we're also offending them.
Right. But if somebody is following Prabhupada, so could he be not following the other Acharyas?
No.
Okay.
That's not a problem. Yeah. And even, you know, like we have our limitations.
Sure.
Let's face it, we're babies.
Sure.
So we're doing our best. If we're sincerely doing our best, Guru and Garanga, like Krishna, Bhavagrahi, there is just a new mood. If you're sincerely doing your best, no problem. Yeah?
Yes.
And
one can be offensive, if not falling from, if somebody sees Prabhupada in itself and don't see the connection, that is also offending to the previous acharya.
Yes, he just sees Prabhupada and to the process.
On its own.
Not only to the acharyas, but to the process. Yeah, because the process isn't about... we're not interested in personality cult. Prabhupada never presented himself in that way. He didn't put himself forward. He put Krishna forward. He put Mahaprabhu forward. He put Bhaktisiddhanta forward. It's not about personality cult. It's about parampara. Yeah? Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Usually, like the Prabhupada said... about the individual, but normal understanding is like sometimes like we discuss or like that we should be with the parampara. I mean, mm-hmm. The parampara is much more important than any individual.
Mm-hmm.
But the people like who are not getting these kind of instructions, they say, no, for a guru it's okay, he can say like this, but as an individual we have to think that he's the most important, like if we follow a guru and that's enough.
This is sentimental. And sentiment, you know, like, it will lead to disaster. It'll lead to disaster. Because we have to see, we've talked about it this morning, the incredible mercy network. We have to see the whole picture.
Yes, ma'am.
So you can't just take guru and think this is all in all. We have very bad experience of that from the Zonal Acharya days. Many, many thousands of very sincere, innocent people, devotees. They thought like that. Mm. They weren't educated otherwise. So when the Zonal Guru fell, thousands of disciples fell. Because they didn't have the understanding of Founder Acharya, they didn't understand, they weren't reading or trying to live Prabhupada's books. Everything was based around this person. So important. We have to see the whole picture. not just the guru, or not just the founder of Charya, or not just the Shastra. We have to see how the whole network holds together. And if we know that and we follow the whole, the whole package, then we're in very solid ground. Very solid ground. Okay, so now let's have a look at some words from Bhaktivinoda Thakur on the Charyataka. This is in the form of questions and answers. And I've taken these from a book. Bhaktisiddhanta was very keen that Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings were systematically presented. So he one of the books that he put together from his teachings was called Bhaktivinoda Vani Vaibhav. And these questions and answers are from that. Who can be called an acharya? What are the activities of a Gaudiya Vaishnava acharya? Only one who teaches Dharma by practicing it himself is an acharya. One who propagates misconceptions about the absolute truth to achieve worldly gain cannot actually attain the position of an acharya. It is proper for those who have assumed the post of acharya in the Gaudiya Sampradaya to endeavor to remove all of the sampradayas and anattas or superfluous and unnecessary influences. It's not a cheap thing to act as acharya, have a big responsibility to the Gaudiya Sampradaya. How does an acharya capture the shraddha, the intrinsic devotional faith of a living entity? Those who assume the position of an acharya must themselves follow the righteous path of eternal Dharma. If they do so, other living entities will note their spotless character and their shraddha will be captured. Everyone honors and respects the sadachar, the impeccable personal conduct of an acharya. Now, what's carrying that conduct? We have to be aware of the underlying principle here. What's carrying that impeccable personal conduct is implicit faith. In every circumstance, you can maintain appropriate conduct if you have implicit faith. Not in the mind, but in Guru and the Acharyas. If we have that, even we find ourselves in difficult situations, compromised situations, deviate us. It won't deviate us. But if we don't have that implicit faith, we may have very good level of conduct when it's very good circumstance, and not so good when we're in a challenging circumstance. So the key to getting that steadiness of conduct, steadiness of Krishna conscious behavior, is that you have very strong nishtha. At least very strong nishtha. Because if you have guru nishtha, you have guranga nishtha, you have nam nishtha, then what's going to happen? When something happens, you don't like it. It's not your choice, you can't change it. Instead of getting angry, instead of why me, you're going to say, okay, what's the lesson here? What's Guranga trying to teach me here? What's Guru about to say about this? Okay, so but with the acharya, how he's capturing the shraddha is by his shraddha. It's not actually his behavior. It's his shraddha manifesting impeccable personal conduct.
What does it mean by the shraddha will be captured?
Because we don't want, we want to capture the faith, because at the moment people have faith in so many durashray, so many false shelters. People have faith in so many false shelters, and they're suffering so much because of those false shelters. So he wants to capture the shraddha, the faith of the person, and put it at Krishna's feet. Capture the shraddha. We don't want to capture anything else, because the process is not anything else but shraddha to prem. It's the nature of the pure jiva, 100% shraddha. That's our natural constitutional position. 100%, 100% more shraddha. It's not our position now. So the whole journey, we talk about all these different stages of Ruchi Shakti and all this kind of thing. But bottom line is my faith increasing with the years? Is my faith increasing? Not my knowledge, my reputation. Rubbish. Not rubbish. Knowledge is not rubbish. Obviously we need tattva. But the essential thing and the thing that's going to carry us is the shraddha.
You said bhakti is a shakti that is caught.
Yes. Yes.
And, that's why you keep also encouraging us for Prabhupada's videos.
Yes.
You see that you're capturing something actually.
Yes.
And the shraddha of the Prabhupada's.
And the essential thing that you capture when you watch Prabhupada is you capture the bhav. And this is the essence. When you're watching him, you know, like singing kirtan or bhajan, the intensity, you can catch some of that. That's quite something. Yeah. Does an acharya give mantra diksha, mantra initiation, without careful consideration? The revered mantra acharya gives the mantra to a genuine candidate according to the injunctions of the scriptures, having considered the candidate's eligibility. Although Hari Bhakti Vilas mentions the necessity of both the guru and disciple first examining each other before the initiation takes place, this is not generally practiced. Consequently, there have been cases of both the spiritual master and disciple falling down. The result of this must be that deviations take place in the sampradaya. So we're understanding from this that this is not an ISKCON problem. This is anytime you have a sampradaya, you're going to have this problem. We're talking from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's experience. So you know, this the responsibility of the guru and disciple. Both have to be very, very careful, very, very serious. Because the fall down, the result of it will be that there will be deviations in the sampradaya. And you can see it, rampant. Not only within ISKCON, but, you know, more widely spread. What damage is incurred by behavior that opposes the principles of bhakti? Those Vaishnavas whose behavior is contrary to the conclusive truths of bhakti are the root cause of creating disturbances for the sampradaya. The Kali Chalas in the movement. Prabhupada talks about the Kali Chalas. You know? It's such a... We don't even recognize it. It's so... we're so dull, we don't even recognize it. There are so many people from Delhi being encouraged. They're initiated ISKCON devotees. They're Prabhupada Nugas. They're being encouraged by some people to go and see a Baba in Rajasthan that can get them chanting. If they're having trouble with their chanting, you're going to take them outside the sampradaya to be somehow or other, you know, mystically empowered to chant a mantra? Or you're going to take the time to teach them Nam Sambandha. What are you going to do if you're not a Kali Chalan? Nam Sambandha. You're going to take the time to educate them. If they're not advancing in their chanting, then there's a reason for that. They don't have a foundation. They don't have Nam Sambandha. So that you give. Yeah? This is such an amazing statement. Those Vaishnavas whose behavior is contrary to the conclusive truths of bhakti are the root cause. The root cause of creating disturbances with sampradaya.
So Madhuri, the same devotees are also preaching like at very responsible positions. Also.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Root cause of disturbance. What I'm doing here is I'm wanting to just, you know, I feel a responsibility to Prabhupada to make you aware of the reality, to offer you some protection because there's some quite insane things happening in the name of Prabhupada, in the name of ISKCON on the planet right now. So we always have to come back to base. What is the reality? And then we're secure in our situation. Yeah.
But in this situation, sometimes we also see that the people who are in authority, like, you know, in some position, they are not very sensitive to the masses or the people who are connecting with ISKCON, or are they able to chant their rounds properly? Right. Are they finding difficulties in the very basic things? They are just putting them, like, you know, giving them a lot of services,
yeah.
Do more services, more yeah, services. So they are actually losing the basic foundation, and you know, that connection.
Yeah, yeah, but the thing is that there are two parts to it. You know, it's organizationally, it's wonderful to just have a team of robots to do the work.
Mm.
Right? But the thing is, we have a responsibility to Prabhupada to make sure those people are people, not robots. And they know what they're doing. And they're practicing according to Prabhupada's teachings.
Mm.
We have that responsibility. So we don't want to talk about this manager and that manager. We want to look at, okay, what can I do to help in this circumstance? The people that I'm influencing, how much responsibility am I taking to ensure that they're getting what Prabhupada the Acharyas gave? This is the important thing. As soon as we get off on some personal cult thing, we get a few people tell us you gave a good class, and all of a sudden we're a guru and we're an acharya. We get very whimsical and we say this and we say that. What is the value of that? We're doing so much harm to the mission.
But see, a lot of times we see, like, you know, whenever there are programs in the city and some Matajis are given services, cooking seva or anything, and when the program is there, like, during that time they are trying to finish their rounds. So it hurts a lot. Like, sometimes you want to just go and, you know, because sometimes you are concerned for that person,
right,
friendly. So, but we don't know whether we should be, like, correcting them that moment or...
Well, it depends on whether you have, you know, how much influence and how much of a relationship you have with them. You know, if you have that relationship, and also the mood in which you approach them about it. Because what's the value of approaching somebody and telling them they're doing something that's not so good? You have to be able to provide alternatives that are positive. Just go and point out a fault. You know, this is bad. Why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? You know, it's a waste of time. You have to be able to approach and say, well, you know, maybe we could work out a way that you could, you know. But you're going to have to do a little sacrifice yourself to help people. You know? So it's very painful. Very painful to see that there are so many sincere and serious devotees in this movement who are not getting the training they need, and they really have no idea what they're doing.
What I learned from you in this regard, Matiji, is very, very excellent, that there could be 100,000 problems in the society. It all depends on what we are doing, you know, to help them.
Exactly.
So if there are problems, we have to at least be actively participating in trying to solve part of it. That's the only solution, you know.
Yeah.
So it is our responsibility what we do.
Right. Be part of the solution, not part of the problem.
Yeah.
Main thing. Okay. What is the most significant task of Acharya's immediate followers? In the past 400 years, many anattas have surfaced in the Gaudiya Sampradaya. The most prominent duty of the followers of the Acharya is to eradicate all such anattas at the root. At the root. Now this starts with us. In effect, what it means for us is that we have to be committed to not only reading but contemplating Prabhupada's books regularly. So we know what is the position of the Acharya. We have to be consciously trying to chant attentively so that the subtle material we're working with is capable of looking at all this. How the subtle body is shaped is very much influenced by how we're chanting. So we have to be very, very careful like this. And then, first, let's look at our own hearts. Get rid of the anattas in our own hearts that are creating a disturbance. Each of us. We have to remember that an institution is only as good as its followers. It doesn't have any credibility independent of its followers. So that means we have a responsibility. Yeah? Are you handling it, Rod? A bit heavy? Bit of a heavy one to come into for the first time. Do the acharyas ever differ in their opinions? A self-realized soul is situated in his eternal identity. Whatever such a soul expresses in India will be expressed by another self-realized soul in the North Pole. And a soul in Vaikuntha will state the same opinion. This is because the conceptions of pure souls are untainted by the slightest material interpretation. Thus they never differ. Acharyas advance throughout each yuga. Does each acharya serve to fulfill the mission of the previous acharya? The great reformers will always assert that they have come not to destroy the old law, but to fulfill it. Valmiki and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu assert the fact either by their words or by their conduct. Very interesting point. Any comments or thoughts before we move on? I don't know. I'd have to check. It'd probably be good to have a look at the context. Maybe he's speaking about. You know, I'd have to check the context. Any other questions or comments? Yeah.
Mataji, what you said that we discussed that there's a tendency. Really, you gave us example like that we have meet group of people trying to meet. Babaji, say, therefore.
Speak up, I can't hear.
We discussed in the class.
Okay.
That there's a tendency in the group of people who are not able to chant, so they go to some Babaji and try to see that okay, they improve the chanting. I'm just thinking on the what is it? Why this tendency actually creeps up that okay, I want to do that, you know? So why a individual devotee want to do because he's guided, is that do we feel that okay, I'm not able to do by my own efforts, and if there is some like a, you know,
pill.
It's like a pill, it's like a mercy, you know, because when we read Chaitanya Charitamrita, we read that okay, Mahaprabhu gave love of God to whomsoever he spoke, or you know. And also when it is distributed, when he gives someone else, you know.
Yeah, but you have a look at the first song, Abhagivno Thakur Sharanagati. How did he distribute freely that love of Godhead? Mm-hmm. By teaching the principles of Sharanagati. Not by going to some Babaji to be touched on the head.
Yes, I think this is the missing. This understanding is a missing link. We, this is not taught like this.
Yeah.
And also suggesting this preacher was suggesting to go somewhere outside the sampradaya. That
exactly.
Itself showed that him being a preacher itself is a very doubtful situation.
Yeah. Well, whose preacher he is not the question. He can be preacher of the acharya. He can be Kali's preacher. So when you're breaking any activity where you see somebody in a position of authority, whether it be preaching or managerial, where they're breaking faith in Foundacharya, breaking faith in Guru Tapa, breaking faith in the process, Kalichala. Because faith, this is the whole work of Kali in this age, is to break faith. Why? Because the whole Vedic system, the whole Gaudiya system is based on faith. Faith in Shastra, faith in Guru, faith in Sadhu. You break that faith, you break the Sampradaya. How do you break the Sampradaya? Because you break people's individual faith, they go running here, there and everywhere, and all of a sudden you've got a circus in the name of ISKCON.
But they always quote and say that Sri Prabhupada has written and like chant more than 16 rounds and chant as unlimited, that sort of a thing. And they still think and say that they are.
Well, you go back to the fundamental source for Agaudiya. You go to Harinam Chintamani. Harinam Chintamani will tell you that until you have ruchi, you have taste for Nam, your main business is to chant your prescribed rounds attentively and with great care. If you are chanting inattentively, you don't have any Nam Sambandha, and you're advised to chant 64 rounds, isn't that going to increase your offenses? Isn't that going to increase your lack of interest in Nam?
Sure.
You know, all of this is a distortion of the reality. We were reading yesterday in Bhagavad Gita 4.2 that the disciplic session is broken as the tears is broken. As the tears is not there, it appears to be lost. But that doesn't mean other things are not there. That doesn't mean hybrids are not there. That doesn't mean concoctions are not there. They're all dominating the scene. That's why the as it is appears to be lost. Because of all the other madness that is crowding the scene. Making sense?
And such people are more dangerous, Mataji. We saw previously also, you know, that those who quote Prabhupada and they are very strong in the Gyan part, and then they are able to influence because, you know, the general public thinks, oh, he's quoting Prabhupada, and then they go.
Yeah.
They are more dangerous rather than, you know.
Just make sure that you don't become more dangerous. Main concern, it's always easy to point the finger out. The main thing is that we remain humble servants of Guru and the Acharyas. Always don't bother yourself with, you know, like Maya Devi, she's very expert. She'll try and catch you, simple thing, she'll catch you on the four rigs. Can't catch you on that. She'll catch you on Sadananda. This guy has avoided these two. Gotta find something, some way to catch him, this one. Okay, what are we gonna do? Distraction. I'll catch him on distraction. So distraction means that we're not concerned with the real thing. We're being distracted by all the peripheral. What this one did, what that one did, what this one said. Unless it has some educational value, we have no interest in this fall down, that fall down, whatever happened. We're not interested. Focus. We have to become ekantic. Single-minded.
Plus we get attached to those people because we are attached to those people because we think that, oh, why, I mean, what to do? I mean, we could help them. And so that creates a problem. Like helping ourselves, we forget, of course, but
it's easier to teach others, no? Rather than living yourself.
Yeah, but you work on yourself. We all have to work on ourselves. You know, the thing is, do you want to, you know, at the time of death, you want to be greeted by an angry Prabhupada or a smiling Prabhupada? Put it very simply. Somebody's got to meet you at the gate. Okay, let's read on. Have a look at bona fide founder of Acharya. Just a few little thoughts that I wanted to share with you on this, because this is another area where we're not very clear. We throw the term around a lot, it's used a lot, we don't really understand the implications of it, especially as a working principle. In ISKCON, devotees know the term founder acharya, but how many of us understand the full meaning of it? That it does not just indicate a title, but signifies a transcendental system. One that has been utilized by such Vaishnav stalwarts and Sri Ramanujacharya and Sri Madhvacharya to facilitate the mass liberation of conditioned souls in Kali Yuga. Srila Prabhupada, being Mahaprabhu's Senapati Bhakta, introduced the same system for the same reason. Specifically, he introduced it because that was the desire of his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura. Now, what I'd like to share with you today is the qualification for being a founder acharya. It's not a cheap thing. The five characteristics of a bona fide founder acharya are found in Prapanamrita Tapana, a scripture from the Sri Sampradaya that discusses the founder acharya system. By reading these, we can easily understand Srila Prabhupada's very elevated position and his first-class credentials. We can also easily ascertain who is not qualified for the position. The five characteristics of a bona fide founder acharya are: 1. He is Udarika, the savior of everyone. Those who come after him are called Upakarika, his helpers. They are never to be equated with the founder acharya. They are always servants. Whatever gurus are coming after Prabhupada, they can never be equal to Prabhupada. Not because he's Prabhupada, but because he's founder acharya. It's the way the system works. So then those gurus have to see themselves, to avoid the danger of seeing themselves as equal or superior to Prabhupada, they have to be firmly fixed in the understanding, I'm Prabhupada's servant. I'm his helper. Second, he is Dinabaya. Dina, very fallen. Abaya, to remove fear, become fearless. The founder acharya removes the fear of all fallen souls by his teachings. Anyone who takes shelter of them will become fearless. 3. He gives purports to those scriptures containing Vaishnava Siddhanta, for example, Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, and he makes such purports available to the world. Such books are called Mahagranthas. Not a cheap thing. He also gives purports to the songs of the Vaishnava Acharyas. His very name becomes identified with the philosophy of Lord Vishnu himself, for such is his transparency and potency. His potency lies in his transparency. And if he's transparent, he's none different than Vishnu. Pretty amazing. So you can understand from this, it's not, you know, like, we tend to throw terms around, not really be aware of the significance of the terms that we're throwing around. We take them cheaply, loosely, and then they become insignificant. And then the term which designates a person means that that person becomes insignificant. We've degenerated the term, so we've automatically degenerated the position of the person. But if we keep in mind what it takes to be a bona fide founder acharya, and Prabhupada scores 5 out of 5 on this, no doubt, for an impartial observer. Yeah? Any final questions? You have any questions, Rabbi? It's overwhelming. Yeah.
Bhattaji, regarding this fourth point, he also gives purpose to the songs of Vaishnava Acharyas, like our Vaishnava songbook. Mm-hmm. So Pranav was once asking, like, all the translations of these songs, mm-hmm. are these given by, I mean, he was asking who has written these translations.
So I think it was a Chudananda, wasn't it?
But Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada spoke about them.
Some of the songs, that's the transcription of Prabhupada speaking. And I think the other translations were done by Chidananda Swami.
I don't know how to put it together, but like after hearing so much about Prabhupada and like especially the founder acharya and everything, and it keeps coming, and the baggage also, everything. So it becomes very natural to, have so much respect for Prabhupada and so much, like, everything for Prabhupada, and very difficult to, like, find, there is a tendency to find someone closer to Prabhupada, and very few such
Well, you have to, you know, this...
Help us, you can see one.
No, you see, the thing is, what does it mean to be close?
Close as qualities, like, I mean...
Qualities, okay, that's yeah. good. Because Prabhupada tells them the story of the king and the mosquito.
Yeah.
You know,
king and the mosquito.
That the king is sitting on his throne, and the mosquito is sitting on his arm, sucking his blood.
Yeah.
And Prabhupada says, "Is this close association?
Yeah.
It's not close association. Yeah. It's a disturbance." So you know, when we're looking at closeness, then we have to know the internal. We have to know the heart of the person. We have to get close enough to know the heart of the person. And the heart's revealed through words and behavior. So basically it means you have to be around somebody to see what's going on. I have to be hearing regularly from them to know what's going on. Like that. But it's important, this point, this first point, that those who come after him are his helpers, this is an important point to come to terms with, because we can't go looking for a Prabhupada. You know? Found an acharya. We can't go looking for a Prabhupada. We go looking for a servant, sold out servant of Prabhupada. And Prabhupada gives the story or the analogy of when there's a war, so many are injured. There's only one doctor on shift that night, but there are five nurses. So he instructs them. And by them following his instruction, they're as good as the doctor. This is the thing. This is how Parampara works. Who can be as good as Krishna? He's the other guru. I was reading this morning in the second canto, Brahma was saying, you know, I'm the head of the Sampradaya and I'm reputed to know all this Vedic information, but I'm completely bewildered. No, not only me, but Shiva, we're all completely bewildered. We can't figure out this guy. Make sense? Any other thoughts or questions?
What you said, Bhadi, is very nice, that we should not go on looking for Prabhupada, we should look for those who are sold out, the servant of Prabhupada.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Because if there's a sold out servant of Prabhupada, heart and soul Prabhupada's man, or Prabhupada's dog, then that means that they're avesh with Prabhupada. They're transparent via medium for Prabhupada. To some degree, whatever it is, but they're transparent. So then they're worth hearing from. Because what are they going to be talking? What is a sadhu going to speak? A sadhu's not going to speak, I know. Sadhu's going to tell you what Guru and the Acharyas are saying. It's a peon. It's a postman. Okay.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama.
Hare Hare.
Okay.